Welcome into the Pick Aside Podcast, a recap edition, week 13 college, week 12 NFL. I'm Shane Orling with Tyler Aki as always. And as always, we are available now on YouTube, youtube.com/@PickAsideESPN. Also available wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate, review, subscribe. Tyler, how we doing?
Pretty good. Solid week, both college and pro. And I'm just going to, listen, my Syracuse football team put forth one of the worst efforts I've ever seen in sports in general, but not to play the moral victory game. They took Houston toe-to-toe and confirmed my belief that they are a tournament team.
Oh, good. All right. Yeah. Basketball's back. You and I in the same boat.
Yeah.
We have decent basketball teams, terrible football teams.
Yeah. At least you're not starting a lacrosse player. But
I've never seen anything like a 21-0 lead without an offensive snap.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It was... And like I've hashed this over, but what Syracuse did, starting a true freshman walk-on lacrosse recruit, is maybe the most ignorant coaching decision I've ever seen in sports.
It's really
if you're any other quarterback on the roster, how are you not already in the portal?
Well, I mean, Ricky Collins is terrible.
Yeah, he's not better. He's not worse than a lacrosse player.
Maybe fair. Yeah, I thought, look, the funniest thing is nobody should be talking about Notre Dame Syracuse. It should have gone completely unnoticed.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's noticed is awful for Fran Brown and Syracuse.
It could have been 63-7. No one's talking about it. But because the number of the score starts with a 7.
Yep. 70-7.
Anytime you get into the 70s in college football, that's when you've got my attention.
Yeah, it was a pretty good week for me in college. I have no real complaints. Virginia Tech hit. SMU hit, Oklahoma hit, over Baylor, Arizona. Felt like it could have hit at any point. It just didn't. Oregon hit.
We got 21 first quarter points in that one.
TCU hit. Sorry about Houston. Everything felt really good until we got to Scott Satterfield in Cincinnati late night. And really the only play that mattered, it was the quad bomb, Cincy plus 2.5. Cincinnati lost to BYU 26-14. Cincinnati should have won that game by like 30.
Yeah,
I've never seen anything. It was one of the most I shouldn't say I've never seen anything like it. I've seen crazy shit in college football. That's one of the more baffling performances I've ever watched.
Yep. The turnovers, the what else happened in that game?
We had the failed fourth down try early. Mm-hmm. That was a turnover on downs. We had multiple red zone turnovers.
Yep.
We went 0-for-3 kicking field goals.
That's what it was.
There's nine points with a
kicker who had been 23 for his last 24 in his collegiate career. And it wasn't like we were asking for 55 yarders. Everything was inside of 50.
It was chip shots. Yeah. And we got an elite pass rush for Cincinnati that just destroyed Bear Bachmeyer, but it didn't matter because you got the craziest performance ever out of BYU's running back.
Yep. It was, and we were together. We had a little Friendsgiving going at your place. We must terrible. Have been the only group of people outside of the states of Ohio and Utah huddled around a TV like this game was life or death in all of America. We had to have been like the only 8 guys all huddled around a TV like that.
If you'd told me pregame Bear Bachmeyer was going 15-25 for 127 and no touchdowns, I'm like, oh, we're winning this by 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
But Martin, the running back, 222 yards on 32 carries.
Like, you tip your hat to that.
And he killed the game. Like, since he had a chance to get the ball back, BYU gets a first down, it ends the game.
Yep. It was frustrating. It was a frustrating one.
It was a nightmarish end to what was a really great day in college.
Yeah, it was.
Before we get to the NFL side of things, I do have a couple questions for you in college, and I want to start on the Ole Miss front.
Okay.
Because I had a thought over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday going into Monday. Ole Miss should fire Lane Kiffin.
No. 1,000% no.
I think Ole Miss should sit down and say, here's the offer, either take it or you're fired.
No, because you don't... That would be like telling Kyle Tucker during the Cubs playoff run, hey, you either take this offer right now or you're benched for the playoffs. Or the Yankees, when they went to the World Series a year ago and said to Juan Soto, you either sign right here or you're benched for the playoffs.
But it wouldn't really be that way, because if he does take a deal someplace else, he's not going to coach in the playoffs. Like, it's just, it's not going to happen. When? How often do guys coach bowl games when they take
other jobs? But this is different. This is the
playoff. He's not going to lame duck playoff coach Ole Miss. You're going to have players looking for their next stops.
But here's the thing.
You'll have players sitting out of games.
If he goes to the – and I'm sure there's clauses in his contract, too, that if you win X number – if you win this many playoff games or if you win a national title, you get bumps up along the way. He's not going to be the one that bows out. If Ole Miss does something – they do something, I'd be shocked if they do, but why would you kill any opportunity of having the dream season? Like, even if Lane does leave, if he leaves you and got you a national title, listen, I don't think Lane Kiffin leaves if he wins a title, because leverage out the ass at that point.
Yeah, but also everybody will have made their decisions by that point. This is, look, we know the decision is coming the day after the Egg Bowl.
But with Florida and with LSU, they have to wait for you. Lane holds all the chips in these negotiations. If you want Lane, you're waiting for Lane. Lane can drag this out as long as he wants, as long as Ole Miss is willing to let him.
And that's why I think if I'm Ole Miss, I would just say, you're not going to fuck with us. Here's the offer. You can take it or you're canned.
But if you're...
I think it's also different than the Kyle Tucker thing, because Kyle Tucker couldn't hear overtures from opposing teams during the season.
Technically, Lane's not supposed to be able to hear that stuff either.
Right, but who's governing this? This is, again, right. Like, in the words of Nick Saban.
You don't think that Kyle Tucker's agent or Juan Soto's agents were working back channels?
No, probably they were. The part that I think is crazy is the idea that LSU is able to extend a $100 million offer to Lane Kiffin while he is the coach of an active playoff team. Like, what is that? The Cleveland Browns cannot go, oh, we're talking to Mike Vrabel.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
This is the part that bothers me. And that's why if I'm Ole Miss, like, you're not cheating on us anymore. Here's the offer. It's $100 million. We'll give you $25 million a year in NIL. You can sign it now or you're fired. And we're done here.
I mean, can you imagine the message that sends to the fan base, though? You're having your best season in like a half century.
I think it sends the message that we know what we are and we're not going to be fucking played with. Like, we're not, stop looking at everyone else like they're a prettier girl than we are. But we are as pretty as anybody else. Here's the deal. Or you're gone.
You're willing to kick your entire fan base in the nuts by wiping away. Because
it might happen anyway.
You get rid of Lane, you're not winning anything.
No, but it might happen anyway. I mean,
wouldn't you rather see this playoff run through?
But if he leaves, I don't think there's going to be a playoff run to see through. I think as soon as he makes his decision, if it's anything other than staying at Ole Miss, you're going to see a portal exodus. You will see the corpse of Ole Miss.
I don't think guys would leave for a playoff. I think you stick together for a playoff run, and then you leave after that.
I wonder what the committee does if Lane announces that he's leaving.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we have news of, like, Trinidad Shambliss has hit the portal, and you've got multiple players trying to look for their next homes or transferring to wherever Lane is going. Now Ole Miss is telling kids you're not playing in the playoff. Does the committee look at him and go, you know what? You're not in it.
I mean, they could.
Like, this whole thing could result in Ole Miss getting kicked in the nuts regardless. If I'm Ole Miss, I'm just going to take control of the situation.
Isn't that part of why Oklahoma has been where they're at? Like, the committee takes into account, hey, Mateer wasn't with you guys for those couple of games. We're really going to kind of throw some of that out. Like, they do take this stuff into account. I know they do in basketball. If a coach is suspended or if a critical player is hurt and you miss big games. Like,
we saw it with Florida State 2 years ago when they were undefeated and got left out ostensibly because Jordan Travis died.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have precedent and they will take this stuff into account. But, yeah, I think that you're right. If Lane leaves and maybe if we see some sort of exodus, but to be honest, even if just Lane leaves, that may be enough. And, boy, would that be unfair to those kids.
Of course it would.
I mean, if they left Ole Miss out of the playoff because Lane Kiffin decided to bounce right after the Egg Bowl, if he's asking me to transfer to his school, I ain't going. I mean, you left my ass out to dry. I'm not going to follow you.
This is why they need a commissioner.
The biggest backstabbing move we would have seen in college football.
They need a commissioner. They need firmer dates on official interviews, on hiring practices. They need to figure out how they can extend that into the spring window. They need governing bodies. Because the playoff expansion, the thing we haven't really dealt with yet, is how much it has fucked up the calendar.
Yeah.
Where now decisions have to be made now. Mm-hmm. And the playoff isn't going to start until the third week of December. And then you're talking, this thing gets extended. Last week, it was the week, was it Pro Bowl week that the national title was played?
It was.
Or was it a week before?
No. It's like, isn't it?
We're getting the Martin Luther King week.
Yeah, I think it's on Martin Luther King Day is when they're playing the national title.
Which is, if you're in a hiring practice and you're hiring somebody whose team made the national title game, now normally that guy's not going to leave anyway, but this year puts us in a unique spot. That guy is way behind the cycle as far as getting recruits in, getting the work done to onboard at a new job.
Yeah.
And the school is way behind the cycle where every other candidate that they could have hired will already have a job.
Yeah.
And you're waiting on a guy who might still tell you no.
You effectively have to just promote from within at that point.
This is how Michigan got, and far be it from me to cry for Michigan, but this is how they got fucked into just keeping Sherrone Moore, because Harbaugh wouldn't make a decision on his future until after the national title game.
But if you're Michigan, do you regret any of that? Like, sure, it's not great right now, but it could be a lot worse.
No, because they won a national title.
It was worth it.
But I think
Ole Miss, if you can win the national title and Lane bolts for whatever job, isn't it worth it?
Maybe.
I wouldn't even say maybe. I would say firm yes.
Firm yes if he stays and wins. I think the problem would be Harbaugh wasn't. It's not like Harbaugh was toying with the idea of going to Ohio State. It was, I'm fully committed to this, and I might take an NFL job after. And also, he was running away from pretty damning cheating stuff.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knew what the outcome there was. This is different because it's all Lane's creation. This should just be a happy joy ride where Ole Miss is finally a national title contender and they're going to be in the playoff. But Lane has muddied all of the waters by doing the family tour in Florida, having his wife and kids do the tour at LSU, going to some debutante ball. Like, Lane is the one who has made all of this happen. This isn't, and Harbaugh had the same thing at Michigan, and I often said Michigan should tell him either you're going to be here for however long we sign the contract, or we are looking for an exit hatch. I think Ole Miss should be looking for an exit hatch.
I'm riding this out. This is your best season in decades. You've got a legitimate chance to win a national title this year. I'm riding this thing out. And if you end up unfulfilled and Lane leaving, so be it. But listen, you can just have a holdover year and then try to bounce back the next year after that.
I
think Ole Miss has started to build up a little. If you're Ole Miss and you've seen what it's going to cost to really make this thing work, you can go out and find a coach in the next cycle. Like, just because you may take your lump for a year, well, you can go out, get the next hot candidate in 2027, and you can pay them the same number you would want to pay Lane. You could pay them the same NIL fund. Like that, at the end of the day, you don't have to pay a guy Lane Kiffin money. You just have to pay the NIL money, the roster money that is matching the Ohio States and the LSUs of the world. If you can match the NIL money, most guys can coach those rosters. I don't think you and I look at Ryan Day and say he's anything special.
No.
But he's got the funds and the resources to build a roster, and he's a good enough and competent enough coach where he can go out and make something happen.
If I were Ole Miss, I would give him the ultimatum if I haven't already, and I would make it less like you won't coach this game, you won't coach the playoff, and more like you're done. You're going to leave today if you don't sign on the dotted line.
Well, then you get that.
Because what else are they supposed to do? If they're matching the salary and giving him the NIL investment and he's still flirting with LSU, what am I supposed to do?
Are you really going to fire him, though, and deal with all the buyout nonsense?
Yeah, I guess that's the part of it.
Because, like, I know another thing, too. Since he won, like, 9 or 10 games or whatever, it triggers a year-long contract extension, which I'm sure feeds into a little bit more buyout money that you got to deal with. And let's not act like Ole Miss has the boosters and the donors that a school like Michigan or Ohio State has.
It just bugs me because I like Lane, and this was the most likable Lane season maybe ever, and he has totally soured it.
Yeah, in the most Lane way possible.
Yeah, it's like perfect Lane Kiffin. The other thing I want to talk to you about, what in the fuck do we do with the ACC?
We laugh?
I mean, there is a world still where Duke makes the ACC title game. how can we possibly still... I'm not even going to go through the tiebreak scenarios because I read it and I got a migraine. It's nonsense. All of the possible outcomes that could happen in the ACC, I am firmly against this league getting a bid because it's fucking terrible.
What if it's Pitt?
No, I'm out. I don't want Pitt in the playoffs.
Why not? Because Pitt would have... Think about what Pitt's done, all right? They went out and beat Georgia Tech on the road. Impressive win. Now you get Miami this week, who is the highest rated team in the ACC. If Pitt goes out and beats Georgia Tech and Miami to close their season, along with the heater that they caught along the way, to me, and then ends up winning the ACC title game, that to me is a worthy resume.
Miami blows. I don't think highly of Miami. I don't want anybody in this conference.
I think a little bit higher of Miami than you do.
They've played so terribly ever since the start of the year. That was spectacular, beating South Florida and Notre Dame, Florida State when we didn't know if Florida State was bad yet. Since then, it's just been gross. The Louisville loss, the SMU loss, that's inexplicable. None of these teams are playoff count. None of them can go to the playoffs and actually win a game.
What if Georgia Tech wins this week?
Oh, fuck off. I've had enough of them. It was such a blue ball tease by Georgia Tech this year to look that good. And now you'll go beat Georgia of all teams. But the funny part is it won't... They can't control their own destiny in qualifying for the ACC title.
Yeah, they're done.
They would need Virginia, Pitt, and SMU to all lose.
Or at least two of them to lose.
And the correct two, which I don't even know what the correct two are.
Yeah, it's a brain teaser for sure. And, I mean, this is just what the Big 12 was last year, where it came all down to the last weekend and... All of those games held a lot of importance. Pretty much none of the teams were playing each other either. And you just had to let the week play out, and then you got what you got.
And so help. I mean, the Big 12, so help me. If BYU wins the Big 12 title game over Texas Tech and we got to have a multi-bid Big 12. Like, the funniest part is that Notre Dame is going to be the one that gets bombed out because of this,
mm-hmm.
which is good. Like, I'm anything to impact Notre Dame needing to join a conference to make the playoff, I'm in on. But I really don't want to see BYU in the playoffs. I don't think BYU's any good. They've needed a billion lucky breaks to survive a really bad Big 12. And they got lucky breaks against Texas Tech, and it didn't matter because Texas Tech is actually good.
Yeah. I don't see a world where BYU beats Texas Tech. Texas Tech played one of the worst offensive games you will see and cruised. Like, never in doubt, cruised to not just a win but a cover, a double-digit point cover. I'm not worried about that at all.
Anything, listen, you know how I feel. I've adopted chaos theory. Anything to get Notre Dame and Alabama out of this, and I'm thrilled.
All right. You may get your wish.
But the problem is I'm going to pay for that with Miami getting in, or Georgia Tech getting in, or Virginia getting in.
Would you be upset if Pitt's in? Is that pissing in your Cheerios?
I don't want to see Pitt. I really don't. I really don't want to see Pitt.
I enjoy watching Pitt. I really do. I would love to see what it looked like if they actually gave a shit about that Notre Dame game.
See, I can't take it away. Like, this, that's where you can say that game didn't matter, but if it ends up keeping you out of the playoff, then it did matter.
How is it going to keep you out of the playoff?
Well, I guess if they win the ACC and the ACC ends up being a zero-bid league, Tulane is ranked ahead of them now.
Well, the new playoff rankings aren't out. They come out tonight.
Yeah, but Tulane's going to be ahead of Pitt.
Are they?
In the playoff ranking? I think so. North Texas is going to be ahead of Pitt. North Texas is 10-1. JMU could be ahead of Pitt.
But they won't be ahead of Pitt after if the ACC plays out the way that it will. If Pitt wins the ACC, those teams won't be ahead.
I don't know, because if you look at Pitt beating Miami, and then Pitt and Miami are both 9-3, and Pitt gets some dead body in the ACC title.
Like, I'm looking. Okay,
is 9-3 Pitt a better resume than what might be an 11-1 JMU or an 11-1 North Texas or a 10-2 Tulane? It's where I just look at it and go, you're going to get the Big 12 champion because it's probably going to be Texas Tech. If it's not, it's BYU. Whichever of those two teams it is will be ranked ahead of the ACC champion. And then you get the real fuckery of a JMU, North Texas, and Tulane going in front of the ACC champion, and we get a zero-bid ACC.
Well, the problem is that North Texas and Tulane are in the same conference. So only one of those teams can win a conference. JMU is a different story there.
But that even furthers the point. One of North Texas and Tulane is going to win the conference, mm-hmm. and JMU is going to win the conference. That might lead you to having two group of five teams from separate conferences that are both conference champions and both ranked ahead of the ACC champions.
Isn't there a world where Navy can win the AAC still? Yeah, there is. So, like, there's no guarantee that either North Texas or Tulane wins the conference.
I mean, one of them's going to win the conference.
But only one of them can get in.
What's Tulane going to lose to Charlotte? They're 30.5-point favorites. They're going to go to the game. And North Texas is a 20.5-point favorite at home against Temple.
How do the tiebreakers shake out? Because they're all 6-1.
That is a good question. Tulane didn't play Navy. I have to imagine they have the tiebreak on whatever it ends up being. And North Texas destroyed Navy.
Okay.
So Navy's path would probably be Tulane losing as a 30.5-point favorite to Charlotte.
Okay.
Like, one of those teams is going to be the champion, and JMU is going to be a champion. They might all be ranked ahead of whatever the ACC title is.
I don't think that...
It would make me incredibly happy.
I don't think that if Pitt wins the ACC, there's no... Because, like, not that this is anything, really, but Pitt is two spots behind Tulane in the AP poll and four spots behind JMU in the AP poll as well. So if Pitt goes out and beats Miami, just by beating Miami, they'll leapfrog all those teams. And then if you win the ACC title, you'll only move up.
I don't know that they'll leapfrog them.
If they beat Miami?
Because
your perception of Miami, I don't think, is everyone else's perception
which
of Miami.
Which is fine. I understand that. But you'd end up with 2-9-3 teams against resumes I can hold up and just say North Texas 10-1.
But you
11-1.
Okay, but then you look at the actual breakdown of the resumes themselves, and you go...
Yeah, but why can't I... Well, listen, I'm not talking about what the committee would do. I'm talking about what I would do.
Okay.
Why can't I look at the ACC and go, you know what? This is exactly what you fucking deserve. You decided to go bi-coastal and add all these stupid-ass teams and unbalance your schedules, so now your reward is you are a group of five conference.
No,
enjoy.
But here's what I would say. If you're the one that's also willing to kick Ole Miss out of the playoff because Lane Kiffin's not coaching for them, can't you say the inverse for Pitt? You made a quarterback change, and you're a completely different team since that quarterback change?
I wouldn't kick Ole Miss out of the playoff. I wondered if the committee would do it. I would bar the ACC from the playoff because they stink.
Pitt is better than both JMU, North Texas, and Tulane, and you know
that. I'm not arguing that.
So why wouldn't you put them in? Like, if you go out and beat Miami this week, you will be firmly ahead of all of these teams.
I don't know. I don't think. I just don't respect Miami.
That's where you and the committee differ.
Whatever. I'm not going to get what I want. The ACC is going to get a playoff team. I would just like it to not get a playoff team.
Okay.
If North Texas and Tulane, then you have another ranked win. They'll play each other. JMU's probably going to be the odd man out here because they won't have a ranked opponent in the conference title game.
Pitt will have how many ranked wins? They'll have beaten Georgia Tech. They'll have beaten Miami. They'll have beaten a then-ranked Florida State. Yeah. So they'll have three ranked wins on their ledger. Plus, if you win the title game, you will have beaten Virginia, who's also ranked.
There's going to be some gross logos on the playoff bracket when it comes out. This is a wildly unpredictable field.
I think it's unpredictable, but I don't think there's going to be like sticker shock at what the logos are.
I think the casual fans will see some. Like, the people who would expect it to be the traditional powers, and you end up seeing teams like Pitt.
But who are we going to be missing out on here? Like, you'll miss out on Clemson.
Clemson, Penn State.
Penn State, okay.
LSU.
LSU. But, like...
Maybe Bama.
But think of the teams that you're getting in because of losing out on them. You're getting Oklahoma. You're getting A&M.
If we end up in the chaos reality and Bama gets left out because, like, just picture Tulane and Pitt or Tulane and JMU or North Texas and JMU and Bama and Notre Dame are left on the outside looking in. Dude.
There's no way they're both getting left out. I don't see it.
If that happens, people are going to riot. We will have the worst example of playoff format discourse ever in human history. It'll be explosive.
Yep.
All right, NFL.
NFL.
Kind of an odd week to me, but it was not a terrible week.
It was an entertaining week, I'll give you that.
Very entertaining. And I got to tell you,
there are stories in pretty much every game.
We're going to do the Thanksgiving games before the holiday, obviously. Probably the Black Friday game as well. And then we'll do the Sunday slate on Friday for picks. Mm-hmm. Knocked it out of the park weekend.
The NFL is strutting around. They're peacocking around right now in their New York offices because all four games are pure theater.
It's tremendous.
With playoff implications, some do-or-die type of games, too. Like, they are all theater. And who would have thought that with one of the teams in one of the games has three wins right now? But it's an important game.
Yeah, it's going to be spectacular. I want to start with the Thursday night game because I want to ask the question, who does this say more about? The Bills losing versus the Texans winning. Who does the result say more about?
I'm not going to lie. I think it says a lot more about the Texans.
I do too.
Because that defense is legit. Like, I'm starting to get like a little bit of a 2018 Bears type of vibe with this team where I don't know what quarterback play I'm getting week to week. There's some games where C.J. Stroud looks elite. There's some games where he looks like the 27th ranked quarterback in the league. But I know every week I'm getting a ferocious pass rush. Mm-hmm. I'm getting some of the best cover corners in the entire league. And I know that the head coach is going to give you a chance to win.
Go ahead.
I just think that the when you've got a pass rush like that, you can beat any team in the league. You can. That's a team that right now both you and I think the Rams are by far and away the best team in all football, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a team that could give the Rams a run because of what that – because toe for toe, they have a better pass rush than the Rams that do. And the Rams have a damn good one, like one of the better ones we've seen in years.
Yep.
This one can go toe for toe and is probably better.
I am getting a different comp, but like a really lofty one for me. This is 2015 Broncos with late career Peyton Manning with bolts in his neck and Brock Osweiler. And one of the best defenses ever assembled, with Von Miller having an MVP caliber year, Derek Wolfe on the opposite side of him. You had Aqib Talib and Chris Harris on the back end. That it was just a totally elite defense that carried that team.
I think we're talking about the same teams that went through different adventures, though.
Yeah, where the Broncos ended with a Super Bowl victory, and the Bears could have. I'm so impressed with D'Amico Ryans to start the season 0-3, to lose your quarterback with the offensive line that they have without their running back. Like, so Nico Collins has missed time. Tank Dell is dead. Like, so much has gone wrong. And they've battled back from 0-3 to be sitting now at 6-5, inside track for the playoffs, potentially could still win their division. And it's all on the back for a defensive head coach of his defense.
Yeah.
And I think this is a perfect juxtaposition because the Bills' defense is awful. And it's Sean McDermott, defensive head coach, and it's never your defense. It's always your quarterback needing to go superhero mode. I respect the Texans so much. And this one was a performance where I ended up really bullish on them. I think they're going to make the playoffs, and that is not a team anyone is going to want to play when they get there.
I'm looking this up. What can we get for AFC title here? What can we get for an AFC title on this team?
I'd have to imagine it's better than 10-1.
Futures, conference winner, AFC, 20-1.
I got to tell you, I don't hate that at all. I'm really bullish on them with what they have defensively.
I gotta see their schedule. Do they still have a Titan game left too?
Well, the key game for them is the Chief game.
Right.
Because that'll just decide which of those two teams.
Wow.
Makes the
look
playoffs.
Listen to this schedule the rest of the way. All right. So go on the road for the Chiefs. All right. You can probably still lose that game and make the playoffs. Then you host the Cardinals, host the Raiders, travel to the corpse of the Chargers, and then host the Colts. You got a lot of home games left.
Yeah, they play the Colts twice, which is important because
this week.
The fact that they play the Colts twice, they can win the division.
Yeah.
They can tie the Colts in the ether. The 6-5 right now, Colts are 8-3. Mm-hmm. You win both games. Not that there's stuff that has to happen in between, but basically puts you both at 8-3 effectively, or at 8-5 effectively, and you'll hold the tiebreak.
Yeah.
Like the Texans are by no means out of the AFC South.
And you can lose to the Chiefs and still be fine.
Yeah.
Because, A, you still have the way in through the division. Now, you've done pretty well in the division, too.
Beating the Chiefs would effectively guarantee them a playoff spot and eliminate the Chiefs. So that, to me, remains the key game. Mm-hmm. But, I'm bullish on this defense. And Daniel Jones against this pass rush, what's that going to look like?
We've seen what Daniel Jones looks like with pressure the last couple of weeks, and it hasn't been good. So, yeah, I look at the Texans very live to win the division, very live to win even the conference, and definitely to make the playoffs. I mean, I think that 20-1 is not a terrible long shot, and maybe one that we look to get in on.
I have two more games I want to ask you the same question about.
Okay.
Colts-Chiefs. Does it say more about the Colts or more about the Chiefs?
You know, I almost look at this game a little bit like that Seahawks-Rams game from a couple weeks ago. I'm not downgrading the Colts from a loss here. You were in control for a good amount of this game, too. And it's just, once again, another example of why I'll never count out the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Because Patrick Mahomes puts on the Superman cape every once in a while, and he willed them to a win in this game. Defense did just enough. You had the clutch late game-tying drive, and then you go out and you win the thing in overtime. So I would say I give three stars to the Chiefs, and I give one to the Colts as well.
I think two things can be true at once. The Chiefs had a championship response to a week of really hearing the noise, the loudest the noise has ever been in the Mahomes era in Kansas City. Championship response to go out and win this game and take it, being down 11 points in the fourth quarter and scoring 11 unanswered. It was just needed. The two-point conversion, the bullet that he threw. Yeah.
Boy, how about Rashee Rice, too?
Yeah,
great. You see what a difference when you have a legit one receiver on the team, what it looks like.
The Colts side of things to me is they've proven that they're good. They've proven to me that they're legitimate. I think their problem is going to be they've also proven that they're really just not ready to win these games. Like,
that's
this
fair.
This was the classic big spot. They lost to the Rams.
Too. That's not easy.
No, it's really hard. But like, to be in control of it for as long as they were and let go of the rope in the fourth quarter, you are proving to me, because it's added up now. Like, who they've beaten, you do start to contextualize it. And I know Bears fans get sick of hearing that. But like, you beat the Falcons in Europe in a close game. But you lost on the road to the Steelers in a game where you were favored. You've beaten the Titans. You've beaten the Chargers. You've beaten the Cardinals. You've beaten the Raiders. You've beaten the Titans again. You beat the Broncos on a leverage penalty where you should have lost. You beat the Dolphins, who nobody cares about. Anytime you've played a big-time team in a big-time spot, you lost by one score to the Rams, you lost by one score to the Steelers, you lost by one score to the Chiefs. They've just, over the body of work, they are proving they are not ready for these moments.
Yeah, but I would say, like, to anyone who's saying, like, oh, they're not a good team or their record isn't, like, there's a difference between, I think, what the Colts are doing and what a team like the Bears or even the Broncos are doing. Because look at some of these results. I mean, you're winning some of these games by three touchdowns.
Yeah.
We don't see those type of performances from the Bears or the Broncos. You see the, boy, we need all 60 minutes and maybe then some.
It's why I started by saying they're real.
Yeah.
They're good. I'm taking nothing away from what they've accomplished, because good teams pump bad teams, and that's what they've done. Just, they are starting to show habitually. I don't think they're ready for the huge spot.
That's fair.
And part of that is Daniel Jones is your quarterback, and I just don't know how far that can take you. The last game I wanted to ask you that question about is Eagles-Cowboys. Who does it say more about? Because Cowboys are sneaky in playoff hunt now.
Yeah, I would say it says a little bit more about the Cowboys. I'll say this, hand up. I thought Brian Schottenheimer, we were going to look back at that hire this from the offseason and be like, oh, they promoted the guy from within, kind of a lazy process and all that. That guy can coach.
Yeah.
He can coach. And you see some of the stuff with him in the locker. Like, I loved his – I'm not someone who's like a sucker for these post-game locker rooms, even like the good, better, best stuff from the Bears. I'm not doing backflips and cartwheels over it.
Hater.
But the shoddy one from this past week, I loved that one. I loved every second of it. But you can't win the game in the first quarter. You can't win the game in the second or the third. But that fourth, how about that fourth quarter?
Yeah, it was cool.
I loved it. I loved it. And for everything that they've been through, I mean, one of their teammates died.
Mm-hmm.
And he peeled this team off the mat and has navigated them through distraction after distraction, whether it was Micah Parsons or what's going to happen with CeeDee Lamb and his injury, the team being as far under 500 as they were. Then you lose a teammate. Then you, all of a sudden, there's some trade chatters. What's going to happen at the deadline? And all of a sudden, this team's back to 500 right now, playing good football. The defense looks better.
Mm-hmm.
And the offense, I mean, they've just proven they're a very resilient group. And I think that's a reflection of the head coach.
I think it's, again, I think it's two things can be true. One, the Cowboys have a very good offense when things are going well. Also, something about that fourth quarter, like, yes, they did win it, but failing to cash in on a couple spots where they could have won it earlier in the game bothered me. The Eagles side of things, I need you to make a decision on just who you're going to be. Up 21-0 and only giving your running backs 11 carries total in the game.
Yeah.
When you go up 3 touchdowns in an NFL game and Jalen Hurts is your quarterback, like, I want to use that specifically because Jalen Hurts is a hesitant and limited passer. He just is. It's not an insult. Mm-hmm. He's a very good player, but he's hesitant and he's limited. You can't ask him to throw 40 times in a game that you lead by 3 touchdowns. You should have never been throwing the ball. This is the ultimate service academy offense, and they totally went away from it. And I think it's because they want to keep A.J. Brown happy.
Well, the other part of it, too, is this Eagles team starts every drive at 1st and 9 because of the effectiveness of the tush push.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you start 1st and 9, you have to go one less yard than every other team in all of football. And if you can't get your run game, like 3 yards every drive, if you average 3 yards a carry and you've got one of the, if not the most talented running back in football, if you can't get 3 yards a carry with that offensive line, I get that there's injuries, but for the most part, still a very good unit. If you can't get 3 yards a carry with that, then you've got bigger issues.
It just did bother me. And then you look forward to Thursday, and we'll do the picks episode. But you look forward to Friday, rather, against the Bears. And I do think it's kind of, this could go one of two ways on Philly. You either have a get-right game in you where you just choke-slam a team, or this is the 2023 death spiral, and you're just, this locker room's going to give it up.
Yeah, I've said it this week on some of the shows, but like 99.9% of teams in all levels of football, high school, peewee, college, NFL, if I'm playing the team the week after blowing a 21-point lead, I would not want to face 99.9% of those teams. The Eagles are in the 0.01%. I would want to face the Philadelphia Eagles after blowing a 21-point lead.
Yep, they've shown us that
they're a team that splits from the seams when they face adversity like this.
They're a little toxic.
Mm-hmm.
They've just shown us that. So it's up to them to prove that they aren't. And unfortunately, that would be turning the Bears into their pleasure pillow, which nobody here is rooting for. I do want to talk about the Lions a little bit, too. Okay. And I will preface this with, I know the talk around town lately is, oh, well, nobody talks about the way other teams win ugly. Mm-hmm. Okay, watch this. Is the Lions winning against the Giants more a win is a win, or is it more we've got problems?
I think it's a we got problems type of game.
I agree with you. I think they are really struggling with some stuff.
To be honest, I there were two games like that this week for me. It was the Lions. It was also the Ravens, too.
Yep,
I know agree. The Ravens ended up winning this game by 2 touchdowns, but you're at home against a Jets team that quit 3 weeks ago. Come on now. Like, Tyrod Taylor's out there playing quarterback for them. I mean, both of those teams, like, that you got away with victories, but I don't feel good about either one of those teams.
I thought Lamar was really bad.
He has not played well in any game. I get that there have been some results that have looked comfortable, but he has not played well in a single game since he's been back.
The accuracy issues were, like, inexplicable.
Mm-hmm.
And he 13 or 23 for, so what are you, J.J. McCarthy?
And now he's flaring up on the injury report again.
It can't happen. The other thing, and this is the thing that I think kills them, and I do still, they're going to win the North. They're going to make the playoffs. I think they've done the work that they needed to do at this point. They can basically 500 the rest of their season, and they'll end up winning the division.
I still wouldn't be so sure.
The part that does worry me is Derrick Henry's done. We've finally hit the point where, like, okay, you did this longer than anybody expected. We're done here. 60 yards on 21 carries.
Yeah.
It just,
the thing is, there's certain defenses that are just a good mismatch for him because he's a taller runner, I always like it. Like, if you can chop down the oak tree, it ain't hard to bring him down if you get him at like the ankles, because he'll chop right down. It's like a tree. But if he can break through one or two tackles, good luck. Good luck after that.
The Lions side, Goff's accuracy has fallen off a cliff. It wasn't just the second half in Philadelphia. He wasn't accurate again at home against the Giants. You had the Lions secondary, this legion of whom everybody's talking about, Amik Robertson being so great. I'm watching him get cooked by Wandell Robinson.
Yeah.
And not like he was getting torched off the line of scrimmage and could not run step for step with Wandell Robinson.
Yeah.
That's a problem. The interior of their O-line can't really protect. Goff's taking a bunch of sacks. I saw Aiden Hutchinson on Elmanor, the tackle, the worst of the two tackles the Giants have, on an island a lot, doing nothing. And then the Lions want to tout, well, franchise record, 6 quarterback hits. Do you know what happened on one of those quarterback hits?
What?
Jameis dropped a 50-yard dot for a touchdown.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, don't tell me about quarterback hit. It didn't impact the play. You got scored on.
Yep.
Like, I think they got arrogant in Detroit, the front office. They didn't address the defensive line the way that they needed to. They haven't added help for Aiden Hutchinson. They thought losing Ragnow wouldn't kill them. It has. The interior of their O-line is bad.
Yep.
And it's all just Jameer, save us. Good luck with that in the playoffs.
Yeah. You run into a team that has any semblance of a run. Like, you run into L.A., you run into Seattle, you run into any team that has a shell of a defense, and you'll be fine.
And it's why I still think the Packers are winning the North.
I tend to agree with you. I really do. It's all going to come down to how they play against the Bears, too.
That, yeah, I mean, obviously,
if you take your two against the Bears, it's a wrap. Even if you split, you just can't afford to go 0-2. I don't think they go 0-2. I'd be very shocked, but
if the Bears sweep the Packers, then the Bears are winning the North. Like, just how, at that point, the Bears are very good and they're winning the North.
Yep.
But if, barring that happening, it all comes down to Thanksgiving in Detroit, Green Bay and Detroit.
It's a huge game.
The winner of that game is probably going to be your North champion.
I think I would only say that about the Packers. The Lions winning that game, I don't think slots them in.
There's just something, by the way, wacky.
From a Bears perspective, some people have asked about this. Who would you root for in that game? Lion, if you're the Bears and you've got your sights set on winning the division, who are you rooting for in Packers and Lions?
Is there any data that supports that one side is better than the other?
I don't think so. I haven't seen anything. My feel is I would rather see the Packers beat the Lions, because you only have one more game against the Lions. You have two against the Packers. So you can control your destiny a little bit better against the Packers than you can against the Lions.
Well, the other thing is the Packers have the tie that muddies the waters a little bit on any potential tie break, and you beat Dallas.
Yeah.
So I think it is probably the Pack. Also, just like, if one of these two teams, if the Lions wake up, they are Super Bowl caliber. Like, if they get back to the way that they were playing the first 6 weeks of the season, they're a wagon. I don't know if they have that in them anymore. I don't know if maybe it was fool's gold. But if it happens, I think they're much better than the Pack. The Packs...
Real? I don't know about that.
I'm kind of settled in on what the Packers are. They're defense first. The offense is going to look efficient at the end of a game, but it doesn't
but
pass
isn't
the
it,
eye test.
Isn't it kind of similar to what's happening in Houston, too? Aren't
Maybe.
Those kind of the same teams? You don't know what quarterback play you're going to get week to week, but you know that defense is going to leave you in every single game.
Is it a cop-out if I answer that question by saying I don't think it matters?
What do you mean?
Who wins between the Packers and the Lions? Because it really just comes down to handle your own business. If you're a Bears fan, don't worry about who wins on Thanksgiving. Worry about winning the games left on your schedule.
That's probably fair.
Because you're the one of these, you're entering the gauntlet.
They all are. They all are.
Like, that's where I just...
All of these schedules aren't easy the way out. I mean, I think you're looking at three teams that have some of the 10 toughest schedules in football the rest of the way.
And the Bears' schedule is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Bears, we should touch on 31-28 over the Steelers. It's always difficult with them. It felt more controlled than it really reflected on the final score.
Yeah.
But the two opportunities to end the game and failing to do it on offense and needing your defense to step up. It's just, dude, they play with fire so much for me that I have to imagine at some point you're going to get burned in these spots.
No, for sure. Like, it's going to happen one of these games. You're going to be on the other side of the game-winning drive. Like, to be honest, if that's Aaron Rodgers right there with a chance to put this team away on the final drive, I think he probably does it. All right? Now, the one saving grace is while more teams and more teams and more teams are compromised by injury down the stretch, the Bears look like they're getting healthier. I get that you're losing Tremaine Edmonds for the bulk of the rest of the season, but the two biggest additions, everyone's all wrapped up around Jalen Johnson, and Jalen Johnson is their best defensive player. There's really not much of a question about it. But I think for what this team needs right now, knowing that there's no snap of a finger and you can all of a sudden generate a pass rush by getting a guy returning from injury, like that guy doesn't exist, but by getting TJ Edwards and Kyler Gordon potentially back against Philly, those are two guys that are going to be critical for you in the run game. Mm-hmm. Bears couldn't stop the run one bit against Pittsburgh. Those Gainwell and Warren were going for like 6 yards a pop.
Mm-hmm.
If you get Edwards and Gordon back, I think that solidifies your run game enough where this defense, while not good by any stretch, but you're not one of the worst defenses anymore. You're more like in the 16 to 20 range. And I think given what this offense is, you'll be able to manage some of these late game situations better.
It can definitely make them more viable in big spots. I need to see what it looks like in Philly this weekend. And look, if you go win as a 7-point dog, then forget it. Everything that anybody has said is off the table, and you have proven yourself a capital C contender.
Yeah.
There you go. But it's show me in Philly.
Yeah. To be honest, the way I feel as a Bears fan right now,
this is a dream. It should be euphoric.
Well, yeah, but this Philly game is a house money game.
Of course it is.
It's the only way I can describe this game. You go out and win, you're floating. You go out and hang close, all right, whatever. You showed that you can at least hang with the big boys on the road short week. You get blown out, all right, it probably shows you what your true colors are. You're still probably going to find your way to 10 wins this season either way.
That's if they go lose by 40 to Philly, I won't care. I won't have anything mean to say because you've done the work so far that this game doesn't really matter.
Yeah. It's only a house money game because of what you did in the Minnesota and the Pittsburgh game, which frankly I thought both were kind of coin flip games.
I did too.
And you won the coin flip in both of them.
I told Pat two weeks ago, I said they got to go 2-2 in this stretch. And really that means they got to go 2-0 on the front end because I don't think they're getting either of the back end games. So they've done the job, and now anything they do beyond this is gravy, and it would like only further how much I respect the team.
Yeah,
but I think look, they're telling you something. You're a 7-point dog on Black Friday,
mm-hmm.
So we'll get to it. Lastly, in the NFL, I do want to one: the Rams are so far and away the best team in football at this point to me. It's separating even more every week.
Yep,
and the Panthers are not serious. We're going to hit our win total bet, and I'm glad about it.
Yeah.
But fuck me, are they totally unserious. Brock Purdy turns it over three times, and you lose 20-9 because your own quarterback can't stop turning it over.
Yep.
When they had like a low red zone possession early after a Brock Purdy interception and came up empty 0 points, like you're losing this game.
Was that, I think the perfect microcosm of the game was the kick on the final drive that they had.
Yeah, missing that.
57 yards lands halfway in the end zone.
No, it was
not even that it was a miss, just the way that it missed.
They'll be plucky. They're going to win probably 7 games this year, maybe 8, whatever their schedule is.
I think they've got a couple of Falcon games still.
Two Bucks games. And the Bucks need those.
But here's the thing. They can still win this fucking division.
Holy shit. Dude, no, can they win the division at 7-10? Because they got Rams at Saints. That's going to be their last win, and then they get Bucks, Seahawks, Bucks. So they'd have to win both Bucks
games.
Take
care of business against the Bucks. Who knows? I mean, if you get after Baker Mayfield, I mean, that shoulder is not a place I want to live right now.
And when the Bucks are just unbelievably compromised.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, that'll do it for the recap episode. We will have an NFL Thanksgiving and Black Friday plus college picks episode coming your way. This has been another edition of the Pick Aside Podcast.